how much is your mortgage and how much you take away profit versus, you know, someone who was just in real estate.
And so we always do just averages. So mortgage of $1,500, you got, you know, electric bills of $250, you got water of $100, you got, you know, trash of $100, internet of $100, you know, everything like that. So after all the expenses and everything, you're going to clear like $6,000 a month, $5,900 to $6,100 a month, though. Opposed to being a traditional landlord where your mortgage is $1,500 and you might be charging $2,000, though. So you netting $500. So we always say, if we finna do this work when we buy a house or whatever, is we gonna go for the $500 or the $6,000 net, though. I'm going after the $6,000 net all the time.
Hello and welcome to the Hustle Over Everything podcast. This is the podcast where we receive stories, tips, and strategies from entrepreneurs who've done it to help you grow your business and take yourself to the next level as a person. Later today on the podcast, we have Bernard and Georgia. They are the owners of CVH Recovery. Just to be specific, they have two homes. And, you know, they have an interesting journey. When it comes to real estate, you know, we usually think that buying either a single family home or multifamily unit is a way to, you know, increase your wealth over time. But sober homes is an interesting play because you can have a profitable business as the property appreciates. So then you can sell that property and still make an even bigger profit. So we have them on the podcast to talk about that. And yo, I can't wait to get into that. So, but before that, Owen, what's good with you, bro? How you doing?
I am blessed. Extremely blessed, bro. I love waking up Saturday mornings and doing this. And, you know, this podcast is one of those like things that really opened my mind to real estate, because we always think about real estate as in, hey, you know, go buy a house, find a tenant, get your cash flow, you know, have it like 10 years, 15 till like, you know, you actually truly break even or you decide to like sell the house, depending on how the market's doing. But you can actually make way more money by, you know, leasing certain homes and, you know, having a different business model, and you're still in the real estate game. So you don't actually have to find a down payment for a house or anything. So this is this podcast is going to expand your mind, bro. It's going to expand like the way to think when you're looking at different businesses, especially in real estate. And that's one thing we've been wanting to do this upcoming season, is talking about real estate and et cetera. But other than that, man, I'm good. Starting a new job this coming Friday at Vidyard. This is like my next chapter of my journey within sales. So I've been like kind of on a mini vacation this past 2 weeks, you know, taking a little pause for the cause, rejuvenating my mind, rejuvenating my soul. So I'm enjoying these like last couple of days until I start work on Friday. But everything's looking up, bro. Everything is looking up. What about you?
Man, business is starting to grow again. So I'm excited about that. You know, Wit Media is doing its thing, you know, so I'm excited. I've been in these clubhouse rooms. It's been an interesting experience in these clubhouse rooms, to say the least. But yeah, the business is growing, you know, getting on more clients. We're, you know, hiring. I'm working on a treatment right now for Instagram video ad. So I'm excited about that, you know, and just like, you know, working on bringing in more business and giving more results, more importantly, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and I'm also working on this cheat sheet for Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are asking me for that. They want to get me to like create an ebook with them or e-course. So I'm like, all right, now that everyone's asking, all right, fine, you know. But the thing is that, like, it's like there's a lot of them, you know, and at the same, I don't want to feel scummy. And the thing is, too, is I don't want to sell an e-course because it kind of changes your mode of service when it comes to helping people online. You know, it's like, oh, well, I already put this in the e-course, so why don't you just go buy that, you know. But I feel like that could make someone come off as way too salesy, and it can switch my mind personally to make it salesy as well, you know. So that's kind of why I'm not as keen on it, and I never was, but like seeing that there's demand for it, you know, I'm thinking about it, I'm really considering it. So a cheat sheet for one I'm making, but I'm really considering making a e-course. So that's been on my mind.
Yeah, man. Yo, big ups on everything, bro. Big ups on the clients. Every time we, you know, every day when we talk, like, you was updating me on like the new business that's coming in and people reaching out, and every person that you're getting on Clubhouse, you're building like a brand on Clubhouse, bro. So that's pretty like big, especially just a new emerging platform, and you've gotten like money from it. That's a blessing. Mm-hmm. You know, last thing you want to do is like be one of those Facebook e-course guys, you know what I'm saying? Because I think there's like so many people who've made a bad rap for it. They put a bad name and bad stench to it. So someone like me who could be eager to learn about Facebook ads, like, I am like the ideal guy to learn, right? But just because my mind has been so polluted with so many scammers and seeing them online on YouTube and everything, it's caused like some hesitancy. And I think this is what's like making the market like really, you know, the true people can't even really, really shine, because there's so much stench out there that it's so hard to like swim out of and stand out.
Yep. That's a fact. That's a fact. And that's the exact reason why I haven't created it yet. You know, it's because I feel like I don't have the economics yet to make sure I'm like, my value's there. But the thing is that if I was to go to market it, it would kind of be similar to the guys who are already doing that. And I don't want to have myself in that kind of brand. You know, like if I'm going to sell the water, I want to be like the fresh, the actual best water on the market. You know, like, what I'm saying?
Smart water. Is it smart water?
Smart water. You know what I'm saying? Smart water, Fiji. Nah, this is not Dasani. Nah, nope.
I'm just naming brands, guy. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. Like smart water, Fiji.
Fiji, like, you know what I'm saying?
Like luxury
I'm
not trying water.
I'm not trying to be, you know, dollar quarter water or nothing like that, you know? So that's exactly why I haven't done
choice
it. So.
Water, you know?
Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's still water and our bodies run on it. So yeah, that's exactly it. So that's what's going on with me, man. But yo, Apple, bro. You hear this?
Before we hop on that, bro, there's one thing about Clubhouse. I've been reading a lot, like, Clubhouse's steam is they're losing steam. And mm-hmm. I think, I don't know why they're losing steam. I mean, we've been on Clubhouse for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
But you're on it more than I am every day because you're part of, like, a Facebook Shopify group that you do mm-hmm. Frequently. But I've noticed there's a lot more scammers. There's a lot of people who are coaching people to become millionaire coaches when, you know, they've never even held a million liquid ever, most likely. But yeah, like, it's lost its allure, I'm seeing.
For sure.
Why do you think Clubhouse has lost its allure that it originally had 3 months ago?
So one, I think capitalism, you know, mm-hmm. when there's a new platform, and the thing about Clubhouse is that with the social media platform, you know, monetary, you know, gain is off everybody using it, right? But Clubhouse sold itself as being a FOMO platform, right? So it only can last so long if the goal of it is to have everybody on it, but it's a FOMO platform.
Yeah. You know?
So that's one thing that I think already affected it heavily. That for one, it's huge. But then once everyone got on it, everyone's trying to sell something as well, because it's an easy way to gain trust. So I think a lot of people got scammed off it. And I've gotten stories of people getting scammed off it, you know, personally. So yeah, that's some of the reasons why I think Clubhouse is very, you know, is losing steam. And as well, it's a platform that is like one specific product focused. Like, the product is voice and stages. It's not that like crazy. Whereas TikTok, for instance, has a lot of products in it. It has the video feature, but also has like a ton of filters. It also has stitches. It also has remix. Like, has a ton of products in the app. Whereas Clubhouse only has one main product, right? Mm-hmm. So that makes it easy for another app to duplicate it and take that and run with it, because they already have people on their platform. So it's going to be a Clubhouse for LinkedIn. It's going to be a Clubhouse for TikTok. I mean, for Twitter, probably even for TikTok as well. You know, so the product is very simple. It's like how Snapchat got copied. That's why everyone's looking at Clubhouse like the new Snapchat, because the product
stories
is
stories and everything.
Exactly. So that's the real thing. I feel like if Clubhouse was smart, they, I don't know, either could have kept it FOMO and then made it like the biggest FOMO platform where like you have to either pay to get in or, you know, having exclusive things or, you know, or actually, I don't even know. They're in their bind, man, or just sold. I would have sold it to Facebook because they know they probably got offers and then just got out. Personally,
just make get your money and cut with such a product. Like when you see like the ceiling, it's just, you know, like, man. And the thing is, we don't know what the founders' visions are, right? Like 6 months from now, we'll see like what the product evolves to. Like right now, they put on payments on their platform,
so, which was a fault. Yeah, and that sucked.
And that sucked, right? Because it was beta. It was like a beta rollout, and that also like puts more pressure on those scammers to really scam. Right, you're like, rah, like, how am I gonna like the scamming just like took another level now because people can actually accept payments on Clubhouse. Like, yo, like, come, let me coach you like 1-on-1 in like this private room and just pay me. Right, you can see stuff like that. I'm not even a scammer. That's the first thing I thought about. Like, hey, 1-on-1 coaching sessions, therapy sessions. I'm not even a therapist and I'm taking therapy stuff. You get me, bro? Like, my goodness.
Yeah,
it's actually getting out of hand, bro. Yeah, like this thing about the internet, bro. It's opened like a lot of floodgates for everybody, but a lot of people are not taking over. But yes, bro. Yeah,
that's exactly. So you know, I'm grateful though. You know, Clubhouse has taught me the power of providing value to an audience. So I'm really excited. I have a few new moves I'm going to do for the agency, and it really taught me like how to look at things. And people have been really honest with me. So I'm really excited about like, you know, how I'm presenting value to people, you know? So yeah, man, that's what's
also works on like your public speaking skills too. Like
for sure.
Like with your diction and everything and your vernacular, you practice it. And the best part about it is like people don't really see you. So you can actually just, you know, you're talking to people, but it builds that confidence. Like when you're actually talking to people, like, hey, I've had multiple reps with talking to a crowd, not just like in the physical realm that I'm talking to you.
Exactly. So it really helps me, you know, practice my pitch. I've changed my pitch like 6-7 times, depending on which room I'm in. And it really helps me like zone in more on the value I'm giving. So yeah, I'm excited about it. But yeah, I'm also thinking about like the overall strategy. You know, it's not even just like, because the thing is, if you're just on Clubhouse to say, hey, go buy my offer here, or I'm on a podcast to have this talk, and you don't have a clear strategy of how you're going to bring business in, then you could have like a botched, you know, execution, you know, but like a good marketing strategy is how you're going to impact business and grow revenue. And then the tactics that you're going to execute on, right? So, you know, that's one thing that I've learned is like, all right, you need to have a stronger, you know, call to action funnel where people can follow you on this and that. And then, you know, grow the business this way. So yeah, that's some of the things I've learned from Clubhouse for sure. Yeah, bro. Apple, we'll talk about that real quick and get into the pod, you know?
Yes. Apple subscriptions for podcasts.
Subscriptions.
Big things,
bro. What do you think about it?
It's just, I see it as, it's, I'm not shocked. I'll start by saying that I'm not shocked at all. I just think with the way podcasting is moving, and Apple is the market for podcasts. Like, they own the market. Spotify is catching up. They're trying all they can to get to Apple. But Apple, they own the device that people are listening to podcasts. They have a podcast app. They've had it for like 15 years. Even before podcasting was a thing. They invented the podcasting space with creating like an app for it. So it just makes sense, like, knowing Apple and like trying to get more revenue streams, that this is the next thing that they're trying to do. So I really don't have much to add to it other than I'm not surprised. I'm just excited to see like what it's going to come out of it and how people like us are going to benefit from it moving forward, like how the podcasting is going to evolve and like what's their strategy on it. So
you know, I was in the actual Clubhouse, funny enough, and I was like, yo, they got the gun. They can charge how much ever they want, and we're going to have to pay it. They have the power, you know? And some guy in the room was like, yeah, you should replace gun with operating system. And I was like, what do you think I'm talking about?
what are you saying?
He said, you should replace gun with operating system. And I was like, sir, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yes, they have the big operating system and they have the apps for it. And they have the power and the marketing to really affect people. If they want to kick you off the platform, you don't have a podcast no more. You know, it's not that powerful. You know,
they own the crib.
They own the crib. You know, if they want to kick you off the platform, your podcast will hurt. You know, unless your podcast is, you know, huge, which is like 1% of podcasts. You know, most podcasts don't even make it past 10 episodes. You know, so even for us, like 80% of our audience is on Apple. You know? So,
and the thing is, you know, like even using, if you're an Anchor podcast, imagine if Apple is like, okay, hey, Anchor, now you have to, we have to sign a deal with you to host all your podcast, like, clients, because we're clients of Anchor, right? On our thing. So now Anchor can come back and like, hey guys, like, you know, it's been free for some time. You got to pay up to be on Apple podcasts and everything because these are the costs. Now we're like, rah, okay, what do we do? Like all our work, all our stuff is on Anchor. So now we got to like take all our audio, save it, and then re-upload it again, like with our own RSS. And that's just like that's just a monster.
Exactly.
So you see this, you see what we're saying, guys, when you don't own the crib, when you're leasing, you know, you're in deep stuff, bro. And this got me thinking like this morning, I was like, man, I was thinking about social media and like just my interest in it. Like, yeah, like I love social media, but we can continue building this audience. But in poof, things can just go into outer space. It can just become dust. So it's like now it's like a game of building email lists, right? Can you have like a direct like source of like, hey, you know, you drop a podcast, you have like an email list of 300,000 people and you control that. That is like, that's like the non-sexy part people don't want to get into, which is like, hey, let's build our IG follow. Of course we do want to do that, but like it's so like it can change in a day. Even what is like Cheryl one time, please note, had 6K, 7K followers, and then one day
13K like, followers.
13K follow, yeah. Thanks for correcting me. Yeah. Then hey, we're banning your account or disabling your account.
Yeah, it's crazy. It'd be like that sometimes. But yeah, man, with that being said, let's get into the podcast, man. Shout out to Bernard. Shout out to Georgia for being on the podcast with us. You know, I appreciate you guys taking out the times. Yep. You know, it's funny. My in Jamaica, my town I'm from is actually called Bernard. You know what I'm saying?
Really, eh?
But yeah. Yep.
Nice.
But yeah. Let's get into them talking about, you know, first off, recovery homes, the real estate market, and yeah, let's get into it. All right, y'all. See you on the other side.
See ya.
Boom. Hey, what's up, guys? To support this show for free, here are some main options. If you're on Apple, make sure you rate and write a review of our podcast. This makes a huge difference and helps support the show. If you're on Spotify, follow us. If you're on Google Play, hit subscribe and auto-download so you'll be notified and have a fresh pod ready to go when we drop. And lastly, make sure you share the podcast on Instagram or whichever social platform you use and tag us. On Twitter, we're at 24/7 Hustlers. On Instagram, we're at 24/7 Hustler. And on Facebook, we're Hustle Over Everything. And now, guys, gotta pay attention to this point. We just dropped a new newsletter. It's called The Underrated. It's a weekly newsletter that breaks down untold stories that highlight game-changing business strategies that shape our sports, music, and culture. It drops once a week on Mondays, early in the morning, to prep you for the week. So subscribe to that, and we'll see you in the pod. I'm excited to talk to y'all, man. You know, when it comes to real estate, you know, there's a lot. We've covered, you know, Andrews Owen. You know, we've covered
Tenant Cube, you know, working with tenants.
We try
to bring something a little different to the table.
Most definitely, you know, the recovery home is a different ball game. So, you know, welcome to the show, Bernard. Welcome to the show, Georgia. How y'all doing? Y'all, I'm excited to talk to y'all about your journey.
We're doing good, man. We appreciate the opportunity to be on your platform, though, man. Y'all doing great things.
And also, we appreciate you bringing the recovery home business into our radar. I mean, we've been in like entrepreneurs. We've heard like a lot of ideas, but this is a very low key idea that, you know, both of you are telling us is extremely profitable. And I think the audience is going to get a lot of value to learn how you guys did it, how you got started, and share with other people who are aspiring entrepreneurs if this could potentially be a goldmine opportunity. And then, just unpack everything that you guys have learned along this journey.
That's what we're here for. We'll tell everything, man.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get it. So firstly, I'll start off with the icebreaker, you know. I want to ask you something. What was one of your worst, this is for everybody, by the way. What was one of your worst customer experiences or customer service experiences? Pardon me.
I got one. It was something in a sober house. So we had a house manager at the time, and she was getting confrontations with a particular lady up in the house. And she kept calling me saying, yeah, we got problems and everything like that. So it was like about 11, 12 o'clock at night. So I come over there flying, and I'm thinking it's a mad emergency and everything like that. So I get down there. I'm like, we're going to have to pack you up because you're doing X, Y, and Z, and you're saying all this type of stuff. So the lady looked back at me and say, yo, I didn't say none of that stuff, though. And I look at the house manager like, man, like, why are you calling me, telling me all these lies if this lady didn't say this, though? Right. So basically, with that situation, we was ready to have the lady leave on a false pretense that this house manager was telling the truth. So we had to apologize to the lady. We actually had to see her parents. We had to let the house manager go and everything like that. So that was just a bad customer service experience, because when you got somebody where you feel like you on your team and they misguiding you, though. So that just taught us, like, we got to double check and triple check everything before we make these type of decisions. And even if they're on our team, we gotta just make sure everything 100% facts, though.
Right. And we had just started. So, like, now we tell people, don't get a house manager for the first year. Just because there's so much, when things happen, now you know what questions, how to probe certain questions to kind of figure out the outcome. We didn't know that then, you know, because if we asked a few questions, we would have figured out, like, okay, this is not how it should be. So that's why we tell people now, like, run it on your own for a year, just because you really have to get a foundation built and know what to look for and what not to look for. So if you're in a situation when you do get a house manager, you know still how you do with your house managers, because your house managers more than likely are in the recovery program as well. So it's like you have a worker, but they're also a resident. So it was just kind of really crazy.
Yeah, then you can also, you just know certain things on the questions to ask prior to leading up to you about to make certain decisions.
Right. So it was just crazy. Yeah, it was just I'm like, no, go do this, go do that. We didn't know what the heck to do.
Yeah, having your manager who is also like in the recovery program, you know, it seems like good on like paper, but you know, it can cross lines too. You know, you can find yourself in some messes when people are managing it, but they're also recovering it.
Right.
That's true, though. It's a touchy thing with that, you know, but you just never know what's their motive, especially if they living in a house with 12 other individuals. What's their motive? Do they not like this individual? Do they know them from past situations? Do they
maybe in the same treatment before? It's just so crazy. Yeah. So now it's like figure it out ahead of time. And now we have expectation for our house manager. It's really clear. We have boundaries. It's really, really clear. And like a procedure for when certain things happen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to get deep into that, into the podcast. But I'll let you go, like, what, you know, before I answer, because I know you asked the question, but what was your worst, like, customer experience?
All right, my worst customer experience. All right, I had one recently. I don't know if I'll say it's my worst, but this one was pretty bad. And it was
pretty fresh still.
It was to my girl. So she ordered me a gift for Christmas from this beard brand. Oh, yeah. And there's supposed to be like a pack of like, you know, shampoo, you know, beard oil, brush, mm-hmm. this whole like set type of thing, you know, $200 type thing. $200 for a beard set, which is a bit pricey.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's a lot. Like they're putting a lot into it. Well, $200 for us though, which is about like $130, $140 for y'all. You know,
that's
so,
still a lot.
It's still a lot for a beard kit.
A lot of money, yeah.
Exactly for a beard kit, right? And it's supposed to come in this in this like, you know, a little toiletry bag and all that. So Christmas rolls around and the gift comes and I'm opening it at her mom's house and they're like trying to record it and I get the package and I open it up and it's literally only the toiletry bag. It's only the toiletry bag.
So you got like, finessed, bro.
Some they're like, what? Like, is this a part of the thing? Well, where's the rest of it? And she was like, hold on, what? And that like sent her off. Like she got on that phone and it was like ready to cut. Right. You know what I'm saying? So she wasn't having it. That was probably one of the worst ones I've seen in a while. You know, so yeah, I would say that for sure. Owen, what you got?
I remember like the one that stands out the most is when with my ex, we went out with like a group of friends downtown Toronto. There's like a place that's like a beer. It's like a beer fest, right? It's like a restaurant. They serve like pitchers of beers. So we're there like having a vibe. It's a patio and we order a platter of nachos, right? With cheese and everything for everybody to share. So it takes a while to come and the waitress that brings it over puts it on the table. Like we can't see how it looks like, but she puts it on the table and she walks away. So we start like nibbling at this thing. And then we realize that this cheese isn't even melted. It's like, it's melted, but it's like really cold. And the whole experience about nachos is that you need it to be hot.
Right.
You need it to be hot so you can cheese it out and everything. Yeah. So we call her back and then, we're telling her, hey, like we can't eat this. We don't want to start eating this because it's not even like a nacho. This is just like cold cheese on nacho chips, right? Like what the hell are we supposed to do with that? So the thing that like really irked us is that she felt like she was doing us a favor by giving us that food. And we're like, yo, we're patrons here. We're customers. We're paying you. This isn't some charity. Like we came here to eat and drink. And we told her like, take this back. It's like, she's like, I don't really know what you guys are talking about. Like the cheese is actually better, like eating like as if like it's cold. I'm like, we are telling you to take it back, melt the cheese and come back. And that whole banter back and forth about her like not wanting to take it back really like annoyed me. And yeah, they've gone out of business, but I don't think it's about that, but it just shows you like the caliber of like waitresses they have that like, you know, it must have not only been us, so they must have like spoken on Google right. whatever
Google spoke
reviews and told them about it. So yeah, and for me, when I go to restaurant, guys, I like a good amount of food. Like I hate going to restaurants and they're giving me like small, like I'm done in like two scoops and I'm looking at everybody still eating. I'm like, fill up my plate, let me get the most out of my dollar, then I can go home happy. Because if I could have cooked food at home, right? I'm here to like have an experience. Don't give me like some fries in a little cup and then like a burger. I can be done in 2 munches. Exactly. So that was my worst experience, but nothing ever tops that for sure.
Let's get into like the first experience. What made you start a recovery business? Like, what was the first, you know, like inkling that made you think, oh, maybe I'll get started in a recovery home?
Tell the story, babes.
All right, so we had a house that we just had like made some updates to the house, but the house was kind of like it got outgrew us and everything like that. So we didn't want to do traditional landlording because we just thought it's gonna be a lot of wear and tear on the house as far as like when people moving in and out, you know, might be, you know how it is, and people say you might have a lease where it say no animals, but you know, they bring animals in the house and you don't find this out until it's time for them to get a 30-day notice and they want to know where they deposit at. But You know, you come in the house, you smell like animals, dogs, and cats.
Yeah, stainless steel, heck, tiles.
Cat hair, fur hair, yeah, all that type
stuff. So we just, it was just too many bad stories about that. So we didn't want to go that route. So her sister actually told us about, you should think about doing a recovery home. Sober house and recovery home is the same thing, but doing a recovery home. We had no idea what a recovery home was though. So we researched it for probably about a month or two. Then we was like, this is going to be the best thing for us because it's a way for us to give back to people, in need as far as coming back from like recovery, getting back into they know part of life, as well as for us to, and also a business of it as well. So it's like it's the best of both worlds for us though. And then now we have more control of the house. We can come there anytime, 24 hours a day. The house gonna be clean, stay clean, you know, everything like that. So that was the reason why we decided to do it.
Yeah, and at the same time, I was working two jobs, and one of my jobs was an overnight job, and he had a cleaning business, and he worked overnight. So we probably only would see each other like two times a week. It was terrible. So we really was like, we need to do something because I didn't want to work the overnight job, whether I was with him or not, because it was just crazy. So we're like, we have to do something because this is getting stressful working two jobs, especially an overnight. So after really just having like the background for people in our family. And then when someone was like a home where people come to, it's like, okay, if we could provide a home that's not a person has to be forced to be there, maybe like this is something I would always want for my son, say, you know. When my son was young, he got picked up from the police, had like paraphernalia in the car, had to go to treatment. It was like all this crazy stuff. And at one point I wanted to put him in treatment, like in a real treatment, but it's like, he's just going to walk out. These are not locked facilities, you know? So I'm like, if we could do something where people want to be there to get sober and not use drugs, this is perfect because we're really providing a home and not telling the person what to do.
Yeah, I also read in your story that like the environment you came up with, that you saw a lot of people who were, you know, going through the addiction process. And how did that play a part in you, like prompting you to actually do something about it? And when you're looking at these people around you, what did you see that was working and what did you see that was not working within their recovery process?
I think just in general, like I have a background working with in different living residential settings, different things like that, halfway houses, shelters, transitional housing. And the piece is that I've seen that's missing is that it's not like it's peer support where people are holding each other accountable versus someone saying like there's rules. You can't do this. You can't do this. You can't do that. Then since it's like a program, people, you might be using or doing different things, but it's like, okay, since we can sneak and get used and maybe not, there's really no natural consequences or anything like that. People was just like using, you know, do it. So I think that that's one of the big pieces of when someone's really trying to change whatever that is, if they surround themselves with like-minded people doing that same process, it's more easier for them, you know? So then it's not like, oh, I'm just at treatment for 5 days. It's like when I leave, it's a lifestyle change that's happening. You know, you're learning this new way of life. You're around people. You're learning new things. You may not want to hear from the counselor or worker about something, but when your peer is telling you it, you're listening, you hear it differently. And it's coming maybe more from a place of care and concern versus if it's somebody of authority figure. If that makes sense.
No, it definitely makes sense. You know, the people, it's like hearing something from your mom versus hearing it from someone at school, right? It's like,
right.
You know, like you take that way more, yeah, it's way different, you know? That's a fact. So, all right. Now, this home, you said that you bought the home. Was it a challenge getting that first home? Because this wasn't your personal home, right? This was a
it was our personal home.
It was a personal home.
It was our personal home. Yeah, we bought it in 2008.
All right, so walk us through that transition.
Yeah, this is your sanctuary. This is your house, and you're turning it into a a recovery home. Like, that is crazy. Like, your own crib. Yeah. You know right. what I'm saying? So, like, give us some, like, exactly. What's the insight into that?
So, well, we thought it would be easier. See, and that was the thing. We're like, if we rented to strangers, like a regular rental, who's to say what they're going to do to our house, you know? We're like, they're going to be doing anything. Mm-hmm. And we're super protective of our house. So after someone was like about the recovery home and you go there every day, you're a part of it, there's chores, like you're running it as your home still, making sure everything's good. That made us feel good because we're like, okay, good. Like, we know that it's going to be taken care of. There's going to be lots of care and love put back into it. So we didn't know, like, okay, are people going to come and act crazy and just be doing this kind of different stuff? But we knew in our head, like, if we're not going to let our own son live in our house using drugs and acting a fool, we're not going to let nobody else come in there. So when we started the process, neighbors was mad at us. They're like, you just got them people coming. You moving out. You got these people moving in the neighborhood. And we just kind of told them, we're like, you really don't know us. Our own son can't be here if he's using drugs and doing bad behavior. So why would we let strangers come in and do it? But I mean, it was hard with us trying to pack up all of our stuff, looking for a place to go, not knowing like what was going to look like for us, you know, but we knew we wanted to do it. And with Bernard being the business side, like my planning would have been like 2 or 3 years out. Like, let's plan for this. He was like, we're moving in 2 months. I'm like, huh, what happened? You know? So how was it for you?
Man, it was a good thing though. A good time. You know, timing is everything. So it just happened for us that it worked out good for us though. Like me, I'm a crazy individual. I just jump up and, you know, do stuff at the spur of the moment. You know, just, that's what entrepreneurs is. We just do it. We do research and we just think it's going to work and we just learn and everything go crazy. That's the only way I can learn though, man. So it just happened with us though. Talking to y'all, like we had put like 3 egress windows in our house and like egress windows, like we had a basement.
Emergency windows that someone could fit through in the basement. Like big windows. Small windows, so they wasn't considered bedrooms.
Yeah. Gotcha. We had 3.
Yeah, because that's a stipulation, right? Is that like you can't consider that like for fire safety, right? Is that
if something happens? To consider it a bedroom.
Yeah,
exactly.
But we couldn't like, so we didn't even know that we were supposed to contact the city to see what the requirements were prior to even doing that, as far as like how many residents that we can get in our house and everything like that. Because if it wasn't for those egress windows, we really would have only had a 3-bedroom that probably could only got 4 people up in there. But adding those three egress windows, 8 got us another 8 people. So we went from 4 individuals to 12 individuals though. So, but we didn't know that process that we supposed to contact them first to see what the zoning requirements was. So we just jumped out there and it was a blessing that it worked out the way it's supposed to work out, right, man.
Yeah.
That's why we always tell people, like one thing too, we always tell people, just do something though. Because if you are going to be scared to do something, I don't want to say scared in a bad way.
That's just in general, though.
Yeah, but like scared to do something, you're always going to be stagnant. No matter if you fall, you win, or whatever, though, everything going to be a learning experience anyway, though.
That's a fact.
Yeah, so we figured out said we're going to do it, just calling the city what the requirement was. They were like, get in the house again. Now we're like, how are we going to get people to move in our house? So then doing marketing, doing reaching out to treatment centers. And this was like 5.5 years ago. So it's way different. It's way different back then than how it is right now. So when we was calling treatment centers, we're talking to the CEOs, the directors, talking to them. They're like, yeah, let's come tour your house. They start sending people. Now it's just like more people are in the industry. You're not talking to the CEO now. You're talking to like 5 people below them now, just because they have grown since, you know, 5.5 years ago. But after we opened our first one, we opened other ones. Some were like, this neighborhood don't work. Then we would have to be like, let's shut this one down. The closest thing to this house is
store. We're going fast. You got to take steps. You got to dissect a lot of this. So give us
exactly.
So, when you first started opening the first one, walk us through, the business of, setting that up. You know, do you have to get any type of certification? Do you have to get registered on a board of some kind? Like, what do you have to do in order to like get yourself ready to open to start actually?
All right. So everything gonna be different per state. For each city. Yeah, for each city. So not the city where we first opened ours was St. Paul, Minnesota. So in that region, in that particular city, you can have a sober house as long as it's not 330 feet away from another sober house. You don't need to have any like licenses or anything like that. Like that's a big myth too when people think about recovery homes is that you need to have certain licenses though. But as long as you meet your city requirements, there's no, you don't need any license, unlike a adult daycare or foster care or, you know, all them type of, what other type of homes is it? Transitional houses, everything like that. So, I think that's a mind frame too that we got to break too, is just that aspect of it. They're thinking you're going to need a whole bunch of money and a whole bunch of work, a whole bunch of paperwork to get started. Now, you are going to have to do some paperwork. You is going to do some paperwork to get started, but it's not as massive as like when you open up those other houses though. So on that aspect, so that answered that question. Then on the aspect of the business side, you know, just furnishing.
But even still, that city, you do have to submit an application with your city in zoning, because there's a law in place called the Reasonable, Fair Housing Act Amendment that allows more than 4 or 5 people, depending on what city and state, it's different for every city, but for St. Paul, you can't have more than 4 people that's not related in your house. So if you have more than 4 people, you're not able to do it. So what you do is fill a reasonable accommodation application out with your city, and being an alcoholic or having addiction, you're considered to have a disability because it's a sickness, and you fill out the application so you can have more than the the city required statute of individuals that's not related living under the same household as a family unit. And since it's considered a family unit, that's why you're able to share rooms and you have the one kitchen, 2 bathrooms normally for everybody, and you operate it as a family unit, you know, so the residents will cook together, eat together. Like they don't have to, but they're able to do all that kind of things versus like you don't have efficiencies, you know, and it's not illegal. So that's the very first thing, is you don't have to have a license, but you do need to, here in the States, it's like certificate of occupancy, basically saying that you're able to have other people in your home and it's been checked for fire and safety. The fire marshals inspectors have inspected it. And so you still do the, sober housing, reasonable accommodation. The fire marshal come out, say yes, you're able to have 12 people, 13 people, everything looks good. You're not putting them in tiny rooms, things like that. So you would do that application.
And get it.
Interesting.
What I want to ask you, Bernard and Georgia, is when I think of a recovery home, I'm like thinking about like someone is in there, but what goes in there when you're a patient in the home? First off, like, are they sleeping, spending nights in there, or are they just coming in for the day and leaving? And do you have like certain programs that actually guide them through their time there to really recover properly?
So, it's a residence. So they're staying the night there. They live here. This is their residence for as long as they're following policies and procedures. They're able to stay there as long as they want to stay there. Coming into our homes, every home is different, but coming into the home, a resident's going to be at least 14 days sober. They're going to commit to do a 20 hours of activities per week. And that can be treatment. It could be working, it could be volunteering, it's something productive to their livelihood and to their sobriety. We ask them to make the commitment of doing 2 recovery meetings a week and work with their sponsor. And then we have a in-house house meeting. We also offer in-house AA and NA, but it's something that's ran by the residents. So recovery homes don't do programming, but we ask for them to do it. Part of that 20 hours will be programming, you know, of their choice. Recovery homes, you don't provide services because it's more of you're providing lodging, which is just like a home, a bed for them to sleep in. But we do encourage them to stay active and busy, because if you're struggling with drugs and alcohol, isolation is not good. Not doing anything is not good. So that's that part of peer recovery and holding each other peer accountability, because they're like, come on, let's go to a meeting. Come on, let's do this. Come on, let's go. What's going on? So we don't have to say, get out of bed. Their peers are doing that to each other. So like, come on, let's go get our nails done today. Let's go to the park. So that's how we do that. As the owner, we do have curfew. Like, you have to be in by midnight. If you want to take overnights, you need to get 2 overnights a week. And you at house meeting, you write them down and we'll approve them or not approve them. You do have daily chores. What else is it?
Yeah, we just got a whole policy, like when individuals move in, that they just check off and say that they're going to adhere to the requirements. And you know, at any time if they don't adhere to, if they unfortunately relapse or something, then we do ask them to leave. So it's just everything written in stone, just up all the guidelines and requirements, what we require of them. But one thing too, like you said a good question too, like a lot of people, especially in our community, they don't know what a recovery home is, and they think like a recovery home is something for when people come out of getting out of jail or prison or something like that. And they just think it's just something for homeless people, but it's nothing like that. Like if you come to, like, even if people go to our website for our sober house, they see the beauty in the house though. Like what we telling people now is, like, when they think of somebody on drugs and alcohol, I don't know what it's like up there, but here they look at it like somebody on the street corner in front of a liquor store,
you know, begging for money.
Yeah, begging for money. But it ain't nothing like that. A lot of these people come from wealthy backgrounds. They married, you know, they got kids. You know, some people may have came out of jail, but that's a small percentage. But it just so happened, like, we all got vices, and it's just some vices that we can control and some that we can't. And unfortunately, those vices took over them for that time being.
Yeah, that's what, sorry, I was going to say before you go out. That's what I was going to say, because I was so like caught up in the recovery side of things, because when I imagine someone recovering, I'm thinking someone who's down and out, really addicted, like, you know, a recovery home is a last resort, which like wanted me to ask you about the economics of it. Like, how are they paying to be part of the house? Because when you think about like a recovery, you think about someone who's just like, this is their last resort. They have no other option. And how are they being supported? How are they paying to be part of the recovery home? If, you know, if they're really like suffering from addiction, whether it's alcohol or narcotics. So I was really curious about that side of things, but like you just really opened up another side of it. Like this could be wealthy individuals. These could be a man and a woman that work at like a banking job, corporate job, and they have an addiction, right? So this is a great awareness for people who are listening to understand that. It's not like someone who's at the liquor store or on the street, or they've just been kicked out of the house. These are like regular people.
Right.
One thing too, like that's why what we learn and understand is in the Black community and minorities in general, we just so far behind on our perception of recovery. Like it shouldn't be our last step that we think about doing. It should be our first step though. Like first choice that we should think about in getting our life better. Like I just say in my family, like just because this person might go to work every day and, you know, married and got kids and everything like that, but they still have a problem that they can't control. And we think that it's cool because they're functioning, but in reality, it's not cool though. So one thing about the white community, they understand like this is not okay to do, but in our community, it's looked down on or the aspect that we don't even know that we have a problem. You know what I'm saying?
And that's normalized.
Because it's normalized. And that's one thing, like with the stuff that we doing, we bringing it to where Black people, like, cause in this business, there's not a lot of people of color in it though. So the reason why we get into it is to say for individuals on the business side, like, hey, it's a good business opportunity. But then on the other side, saying for other Black people, like, it's okay to go to treatment though, because in treatment centers and in recovery homes, there's no people like us. In the out of the whole nation, you might got 15 of us that's black who own it, though. You know what I'm saying? So in reality, that's a problem why a lot of us don't even go to it, because they don't know how to communicate with us. They don't know how to talk to us. They don't know how to do nothing but with us except take our money every month, though. And then what was the other question? Sorry.
When you said last resort, so it's a person's last resort to not die. Like, they've tried treatment 5, 6, 7, 8 times. Like, they've almost died so many times. So it's their last resort to not die. Because people go to treatment, like I said, and after the 28 days in inpatient treatment, they go back home to this environment or to people's gonna, it's more peer pressure to use. So that's why it's important that, like, kind of like rehab, you break your leg really, really bad. You don't go home after you leave the hospital. You go to a rehab center for 3, 4, 5 months and learn how to walk and do all this stuff before you go back home. So that's kind of like what the recovery house is. You get out of treatment and you're not going to go home because you're not strong enough to say no. So you're going to come to the recovery house for 4 or 5 months to get stronger. So when you do return back and when life hits you and the pressure is coming on, you don't go back to self-medicating. Especially for people who, like, literally, like, we have residents that they're like, I almost died 3 times.
Wow.
Like, it's just, it's their last resort to, like, they have to make it work and they have to be around like-minded people that's gonna really hold them accountable and not look down on them and celebrate their sobriety with them versus not.
Yeah, so, and then the other part of your question too, sorry that we got kind of veered off a little bit though, is to ask, like, so you're going to get people from all walks of life. You're just going to get regular individuals who just, they might be struggling, you know, working at Target or Walmart. Then you're going to get some of them individuals who teachers, principals, like, you're going to get some people, like, we had an individual who came from a, you know, a wealthy background where they just purchased a, you know, 2017 Mercedes cash for it though.
80,000.
So, yeah, so we knew that they weren't gonna be there that long. But so you're gonna get all different type of people. And how it works though is some people they pay out of their pocket to live in a recovery home, and some people go to treatment centers, and treatment centers that pay like 80 to 90% of their housing fee, and they just gotta pay the remaining portion of it though. So and sometimes a lot of people they start going to the treatment centers, and once they graduate from there, they feel like they're not strong enough to move back home and go get a house or apartment or nothing like that. So they go from paying, you know, the 15 to 20% out of their pocket to paying 100% out of their own pocket, just because they know what the sober home recovery home has done to them. Like, we had like 2 or 3 people who didn't die as soon as they moved out of our recovery home because they thought that they were strong enough, but unfortunately it wasn't. We actually just had somebody who was our old house manager who just died this week in a car accident, who relapsed and everything like that. So, man, we put a lot of emphasis on, and we tell people it's not about the money all the time with this, though. If you really don't feel like you're ready, stay. You know, if you ain't got the money, we can work with you. Our whole thing and objective is to make sure that you ready when you make that decision to say that you're ready to move out, you're ready to go back to your husband or wife or whatever it is. Go back to your family, but we don't want, like, the saddest thing for us is hearing the stories when somebody died who used to stay at our recovery home.
Yeah, you know, I imagine you see people at their best, or I guess their MVP, where they, you know, become the most, like, improved person,
actually not
valuable, you know, and you'll see people at their lowest, you know. What does that teach you about people, you know, because you see people from a real different aspect. Like, how has your, you know, vision of people changed over the time running these homes?
I mean, for me, it's just real life situations. I don't even know if my perspective on human beings have changed, because, like I always say, we all got vices and we always one step away from being on the other end too, though. So you might be stable. Somebody might be stable today and something happened tomorrow and they push to the brink of no return, or they got to go through a situation and learn it. So, my thing is, like, just because they got those drugs, my problem, I like sugar. You know, I ain't comparing it to or nothing like that, but it's hard for me to control that aspect of it though. So I just know, like, it's just like hot water. Like, a person always they gonna be good today, and maybe 4 months later, they might fall off. I understand that aspect of just human beings, especially with myself, though. So I just put this, I just look at them like how I look at myself, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, we all just need help, though, every day. And some people might need more help than others.
Right. And for me, it's just really about meeting a person where they're at. Everybody's different. 3 months is somebody else. 3 months is going to be totally different. They move different. It's just really meeting a person where they're at and really listening to what they are saying, you know, regarding their recovery, regarding their life, you know, to try to figure out to help them with other goals or give them other resources. Because like I always say, a lot of times the drinking or doing drugs is to self-medicate or to forget about all the other things that are happening in their lives. So even though you're not doing drugs and alcohol, you still got to repair those things that are going to be, that will trigger you to go back to using it. So whether it's you're in an abusive relationship, you need to learn healthy boundaries, whether you've done something in the past that you have to learn how to forgive, trying to get your kids back. It can be so much stuff. So it's like, how do we help? How do we holistically help the whole healing process? And like I said, we don't provide services or programming, but we definitely connect them to resources. And once a month, we have a speaker from the community come in, whether it's about housing, whether it's about health, whether it's about a Narcan training, healthy boundaries, just different things, just resources for our residents. Because like I say, like we're no different from them at all, you know?
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, it really puts things into perspective of how, you know, close you are. You know, my girl works in the hospital in the psych unit, and she would tell me the same type of thing of like, you know, you're really close. You know, mental health, you know, it's all a part of mental health in a way, right?
Oh, yes.
And, you know, one thing that I always learned is that you're always so close to it. You know, a few things can trigger you, and next thing you know, you're on that side of the, you're off the fence, right. You know? But let's get into the business, though. Let's get into my favorite segment, the business, the money, you know? So, So talk to me. How much money does, not even how much money, what do you charge a person? What's the average, you know, average revenue per person in a sober home?
So the price is going to vary, though. So where we at, where we located at, we charge anywhere between $650 to $750 per person to live in our home. So one house, we got 12 residents, and another house, we got like 8 residents. You know what I'm saying? So when you do it, but like we always say too, you gotta do your research to see like what price can you charge? Like what amenities, you might have better amenities. You might be in a better area. You might be going after higher clientele. You know what I'm saying? So like in the e-course, we say too, like if we was 10 to 15 miles out, we'd be charging anywhere from $1,000 to $1,200 a bed, though. So it varies.
Say that again?
If we was like 12 to 15 miles in a different, you know, in a different zip code, we'd be charging $1,000 to $1,200 a bed, though. But you know what I'm saying? So it's just all about the amenities that you have and where your house located at too, though. And the people that you target.
Break that down, because that doesn't make sense to me. So if you're farther away from a sober home, is it? Or from another sober home?
No. If our recovery home was located 15 miles north in a different area with more amenities, we could charge $1,000 a bed versus what we charge now, $650 to $750.
Like, so the amenities, hypothetically speaking, they might have a pool in their backyard. They might be going after principals, or they might be going after, you know, people who got higher flux of income who will pay anything just because they don't want to lose their license or whatever. So it's a lot of different variables, though, on the prices that you can charge, though.
But our range is $650 to $750 a bed. And our bed, we have 2 people to a room. Or 4 people. We have one, a big, big room that we have 4 people in. So that's $650 each bed.
$650 each bed. Okay. And now, how many house managers do you usually have?
We have one who just work all the houses, though.
You have one person it's 2 houses right now. So one person for 2 houses?
Right.
All right. So then how does that management work? Like, first off, what's the average price that you pay a house manager, and how does that work? How does one person manage two homes? Like,
so one of the key things about recovery housing is
another myth you're gonna dispel.
You're working with independent people, grown adults who want to do the right thing. So we're not running around policing. If a person's not following our policies, they're not at our house. So we don't have to be like, are they sneaking out the window? Are they trying to sneak people in? Like, none of that's happening at a recovery home. I mean, it may happen, but it's not happening at ours, because it's like, hey, we're all adults. You're agreeing to this. We agree to do this. This is a partnership. If someone don't want to, like, we don't have conversations about, no, I'm not doing that. We're like, oh, okay, great. Then this isn't the place for you. So with everybody living there, it's just regular doing everyday stuff. So besides someone maybe doing a tour or moving or move out, our house manager does not constantly have to follow behind people, because everybody's doing their chores and doing everything that needs to be. If anything, she's just paying attention to any red flags. If a person's isolating, or a person feels down, or if a person's not acting like themselves, just to check in. But our residents, like I say, our residents hold each other accountable. They'll be like, hey, Sally's not feeling good today. You know, whatever, whatever. We're like, oh, let's see what's going on with Sally, you know? So it's not policing. And she lives there at one of the homes. So it's just like her regular day that, you know, she comes, she goes, she works another part-time job as well. And she will check in on the other house as well. But a person don't have to be there 5 hours a day sitting around with nobody there, because everyone's doing out and about doing their thing.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, just say hypothetically, like you and your girl, I don't know if y'all live together or what though, but both of y'all working jobs and everything, y'all both leave out at 8 o'clock in the morning. Somebody might get back at 9 o'clock at night. Somebody might get back at 6. So the whole day, basically nobody in the house though. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a regular house though. And a lot, yeah. So it's in like, that's another thing where people think like, oh, you got to take them to the bathroom. You got to take them to the grocery store.
You got to take them to the grocery store. It's not a home or anything like that.
You got to take them to the grocery store. You got to do all
this. Give them their meds.
Like all these individuals, like Georgia said earlier, like
independent working. They're working their program.
All we do is provide lodging. So honestly, 90% of the time, nobody really at the house except when it's time to check in and go to sleep or house meetings, stuff like that.
If we came across somebody who has some mental health concerns and they needed a higher level of care, we'll be like, look, this isn't the place for you. Like you have to be in a place where you're able to get up, do what you got to do. But if you need a higher level of care, we have to talk to them and be like, look, you need a higher level of care. We don't want you to fail. We don't want you to relapse. So we want you to find a home that's going to work for you. But this house, this kind of setting is too independent for you.
That's what the hump I'm trying to get over. You know, if I was to ever think about running one, is first off, managing all these people that are independent. Okay, cool. There also is a safety element as well. There's a lot of people in one home, right?
But you got to be spacious though. You can't have a 1500 square foot and try to fit 13 people up in there. It's gonna be jam packed up in there, man.
Yeah.
During that reasonable accommodation application, you have to have blueprints of your home and what square foot is for each room. And you could say two beds, you're gonna be like, no, only one bed's gonna fit in there. Like the city's not gonna allow you to pile up a bed, a room, you know?
Like you gotta, like this is so.
And that's the safety piece of when I say the fire marshal comes out. They approve how many beds you can put in there. So they approved us for 12. We can't try to put another bed in there. I mean, we probably could and redo our application. Our home could fit more people, but we still want you to be comfortable, you know? Like, it's your home. You're trying to stay sober. So we're not going to just be like, we're trying to get the most money out of it. Like, no. But we could put more people in, but we was like 12 people could fit in here nicely, comfortably.
See, this is the thing, because, you know, I'm Jamaican, and growing up, I was, like, babysat by Somalis, you know, and
Jam packed up in the house.
You get me?
Yo, so that's you guys ever go to IKEA and then you see them coming out of a van?
Yeah,
like 15 of them like coming out one by one. You're like, rah, how the hell did y'all fit in that car? You know?
Yeah. Shout out to all the Somali mans. Shout out to Yahya Muhammad.
Malahi, bro.
Shout out to Somali mans in Toronto. You know, shout out to y'all for real. And that's where my mind was going. I'm just seeing bunk beds on bunk beds, you know, a triple stack bunk
bed. Three to a bed.
You know? Nah, we don't even do the bunk beds. We do like twin and four size beds, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be honest with you. Out that way, man, like, it's a big dude out in your area, man. He charges $3,500 a month for a sober house. Like this, I don't want to get like where it's all about the money aspect of it though. But because we really do care about helping people. Like I said earlier, man, my family come from a background where they either sold drugs or did drugs. So, you know, this is my way of, I feel like I'm just giving back to, you know, close some of them sins that was done out there. But just speaking on the business aspect out there in Canada, man, there's some people out there making some big money out there too, though, man.
Hold on, you said $3,400
a bed? $35,000
per bed.
Yeah, per bed. He make. So, I don't know what's his, what he aiming at out there, but he got to be doing it though, man. So I'm like, man, we need to come out there, man.
Right.
This is way better than Airbnb-ing. You know, a lot of people think Airbnb business is like booming. It's hot. My boy just opened like another Airbnb, but if they're charging $3,500 per bed.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to find a link. That's so hard to me, you know, because she was like, yo, did you do research about Canada?
Listen, no,
like,
you have that link? Send that over.
Yeah, like, I'm gonna find that link, though.
Send that over.
I sent it to her.
Yeah. Let's see that.
Yeah.
Because you're opening our minds towards like this business model, because I'm looking at it like, okay, an Airbnb, you got to wait for someone to like select your home and book it.
But with a recovery,
exactly, right?
Yeah,
like, you're so like operating within a niche.
Yeah, I'm saying, even though you still have to market this business too, but it comes down to the aspect too. Like when you think of Airbnb, it's more commercial. So it's a lot of people know about it because it's more commercial. It's more under the radar, untapped market too, though. You know what I'm saying? Like when we was talking, we always say like black people just understanding about real estate now. So when they just talking about like, yo, I want to buy homes, this and that, that's great. But you got to figure out how to make some real money in that house too, though. Like me personally, I don't want to be a landlord making $200 or $300 a month, though. After learning
about that cash flow's whack.
Yeah, it's trash. And then once you get up out of there, man, all the money you want to put up in there in repairs, 9 times out of 10, though, you know, so. Yeah, man. So that's more commercial. It's more untapped market. It's more of a not a lot of us know about the market, too. And that's the way how we feel like they want.
I was just going to say, I think the stigma of a recovery home, it scares people away.
Yeah. Right? Can we cuss over here?
Pardon?
No, I'm just, can we cuss?
Go ahead.
Moderately, yes.
Nah,
yes.
I'm messing with but it is how they think about a sober home and recovery home, man.
Yeah.
No, it's
just education. Yeah, piece that they don't know. I mean, because in movies, it's like it's a someone that's strung out on drugs. You know, that's not functioning. That's just like they just make it so bad that it's just like wow. You know, so that's why what people are thinking. Like it's homeless people that don't have nothing going, and people don't look at it as a sickness. It's a disease. Like it truly is a disease. People are dying. People are losing jobs, losing their family. They don't want to, but their body is just fiending for this alcohol or drug, and they can't function without it, you know? And it's really, really sad. But, I mean, treatment alone is not going to fix it, and it is really changing your whole life. It's a lifestyle change that you have to make to fix it. So it's a forever ongoing process. It's a forever ongoing process, and the sad part is a person could be, the longer they're in recovery, the higher risk they are for when they do relapse that they could die because their body's just not used to it no more. And they go and do whatever. And it's crazy because a lot of people die from it. I just had a cousin who was 22 who, he died from an overdose this weekend. 22.
My condolences to Georgia.
Yeah, it's so sad. kids are thinking it's like popping pills. It got fentanyl and stuff in it, you know? But it's such the, this is what we do, you know?
It's a cool thing to do.
Yeah, and it's really, really sad, you know? Mm-hmm. And the sad part is some of our residents, they're like, they started doing meth at the age of 9 and 10 and 11. It's like, what, you know? So when they're like, I've started using at 10, we're like, what the heck? It's just crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Meth at 9.
Yep, 9 and 10. They start at a young, young age. And we was talking to somebody this weekend, and she was saying, we was just saying like how we're so confused, because it's like, not in a bad way, like it's a sensitive topic about when a person struggles with drugs and addiction. But then like how, when then we get pegged. So like, how do you talk about helping somebody, but then there's like a price on it. But then like, you know, doctors get paid to save lives. All these people are, you know, most people get paid. So it's like, we shouldn't be shameful to talk about, yeah, it is a business for us as well. And you should get paid decent money, you know, just doing certain jobs. And we shouldn't, because we're so hush hush, like it's a business, but we're so quiet about that piece. Because we think the bigger part is of us helping people, but we're saving lives as well. And it's great that anybody who does recovery home should get paid a decent amount of money for the work that we're doing.
At least get paid for one of their protection.
Well, yeah. So when people, we're just like, we're just going to embrace it, because it, you know, and I mean, it is a business as well as us helping people.
Mm-hmm. It's God's work.
Yeah. Charlamagne has a word for it. I think it was called considerate capitalism, you know, where, you know, you're actually helping people and making money at the same time. So,
right.
No, that's for real. And there's a big business to it. So
right.
We can help people out and we can make money and we can have representation in it, you know, because not enough people like us know about it. So,
right.
When you think about, like, when you said it's a big business, or like even recovery homes, we can like a fraction of it, but when you look at the treatment centers and even,
right,
you know, all the, you know, the opioids, that whole insurance business is just a big business, though. So we just getting a fraction of what everybody else making,
right,
doing this business.
So maybe break the, but even with the budget, because you just said, oh, we get paid $650 to $750, but if you,
yeah, broke, that might be
quite, oh, okay, I'm like, because you asked about the money, but I still want people to be like, after what that looks like, by what we take of that money home, like what expenses goes with the recovery house.
I was about to get there.
Okay.
You know, so you already gave me the layup. I appreciate the alley-oop.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, now they're going to dunk it away now.
Exactly. So now talk to me about the take home on a monthly basis. Let's say your mortgage, how much is your mortgage and how much you take away profit versus, you know, someone who was just in real estate.
And so, we always do just averages. So mortgage of $1,500. You got, you know, electric bills of $250. You got water of $100. You got, you know, trash of $100, internet of $100, you know, everything like that. So after all the expenses and everything, you're going to clear like $6,000 a month, $5,900 to $6,100 a month, though. Opposed to being a traditional landlord where your mortgage is $1,500 and you might be charging $2,000 though. So you netting $500. So we always say, if we finna do this work when we buy a house or whatever, is we gonna go for the $500 or the $6,000 net though? I'm going after the $6,000 net all the time. Even though I'm gonna have to put up more front end a little bit, cause like we gotta furnish the house and everything like that. Like, you know, we had to buy the beds, the pillows, you know, everything, like when you go to a hotel, what's up in there though? You know what I'm saying? So we had to furnish it. So just say for an upfront end that we put, just say anywhere from $8,000 to get started though. But like this is another thing, you're not going to come in being at capacity. Our biggest thing, what we tell everybody, as long as you're able to cover your expenses the first couple months, like your rent or mortgage and, you know, all the bills that I just named off. If you're able to cover that for the first couple months until your name get out there, then once your name get out there, the money going to start coming in. So that's a good question for y'all. Would you rather make $6,000 a month net or $500 a month net?
Yeah.
Of course. You gotta get the bag where it's at, 6K.
Yeah,
without a doubt, without a doubt. You know, my main concern, you know, to be honest with you, is the opportunity cost. Because a lot of times, you know, real estate can be a little bit more.
Ah, but right before, I already know what the question you're going to ask. So I'm going to beat you to it.
That's the thing. Give me these alley-oops, man.
I'm going to beat you to it. You don't have to buy a home.
Yeah, you can own rent it.
Yeah, we rent. We own a home, but we rent our properties.
So you can rent a home. I'm not even getting there yet. I'm going to get there. But one thing I want to talk about is, you know, the attention you have to pay to these homes, right? So how on the ball do you have to be versus just paying the manager to take care of it? Walk us through that, and then we're going to get to, you know, the renting versus owning.
So I'm going to just, I know, because she's going to go deeper and deeper in detail, like, you know, articulate than me. I'm just going to punch, though, man. Like, so, like, for us, like, we always say, though, man, it's all about, it's just like in life in general, it's all about systems. Once you get a system there, it don't matter who you bring in, it's still going to flow. So it might take you, what we say, a year to get your system where you understand when people lying, you understand when they might be doing this, and that, though. So we say the first year, have all your attention there, though. All your energy, like you still can work jobs and everything, but just keep your attention there. Don't worry about hiring nobody, this, and that. After that year, if you really paid attention to all in detail of everything that was going on, you're going to have minimum hour that you have to pay to that house, though. But she can break it down first.
No. I mean, that's basically it. So it's just basically finding a person who don't take anything personal. And they're basically your eyes and ears at the house. They're not doing nothing that's not in your policies. As you know, like I'm the one who's going to say that person's going to leave or not leave. There's certain things, everything's written down. And of course there's natural consequences. So if the residents know what's going to happen, they'll call ourselves and be like, oh, I did this, so I guess I need to do this. Or am I on 6 p.m. curfew? You know? So we compensate our house manager with, what would you call it? A room. So she's not paying her housing fee. She's in recovery. So she's living with people that she wants to live with and things like that. So we're technically not paying her, and she wants to give back as well.
We give her certain stipends too.
Yeah, we give her bonuses and different things. Yeah. So we have incentives for her just because she's doing a great job as well. And she's loyal. She's trustworthy. But she can't do nothing that's outside of the policies, you know? So if she tries to do something that the residents are going to be like, you can't do this. You know, they're going to call me, you know? So when I say we all follow the policy, like we have this policy, no speakerphone. So if I'm on FaceTime and I'm going to the house, I got to be telling my daughter, like, I got to call you back. I can't be on speaker because I don't have my headphone. So I walk in the house, I got to hang up my phone just because I own it. I can't go in there on the speakerphone, you know, like I own the house. So we all follow everything. So she follows the same policy. They're going to hold her accountable. They're going to hold me accountable. Let me tell them I'm going to do something, I don't do it. So it's just easy for us to have eyes and ears in the home.
Well, we got to a point where we know what's going on.
Right.
Saying what's going to happen, but we just understand because we built a system that works, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of building a system is getting your policies and stuff in place. You know, if someone's not doing chart, you're on a 6 p.m. curfew for a week. Like, we have policies that we follow. We're not going to be like, get out. Like, they know what's going to happen up until the time we ask them to leave. They know what we're going to say for them to leave immediately, you know? Like, it's very clear cut what our policies and expectations are. And we all follow them. The house manager is no different. We're no different. So it just makes us feel safe to know that if someone's having a nightmare or a bad dream, they literally could just knock on her door, you know, or our other house is so close, she's able to just drive to the other house. So it really could have that care and concern and really be there for a person, but it's not to monitor them.
Yeah. Got you. So, That's interesting.
Al, have they debunked your hesitancy of getting in the business? What's your temperature now, bro?
So my temperature is a lot warmer. Something that haven't been debunked for me all the way yet is still a bit of safety. You know, if someone comes to a treatment facility, and they're and they're paid for, they could be taking the spot for granted, right? And how do we know that they, like, for instance, I know Wendy Williams is in a recovery home or was in one for a good amount of time. Like, how do we know that Wendy Williams, her stuff was safe in this room? Is there like a safe deposit box? Like, how do we make sure everyone feels safe as well, with their stay? That's one thing that I think is something.
Let me ask you, what type of work you do again?
I'm in digital marketing.
I'm in sales.
Okay, so do y'all go to offices? Y'all work? Y'all self-employed? Work? Y'all had jobs in the past, regardless of what y'all did. Y'all went to people's businesses. Y'all
located to our office. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question: when you went into your job and put your lunch in the refrigerator, were you worried about somebody stealing your food?
Yes.
You was?
Yes, because people have gone in my. Listen, I was when I was up in Banana Republic,
and you're a different dude, man.
Yo, I mean, I'm keeping it a buck. Like, so there's times where I know people are looking at my things, you know?
Especially when it's a good lunch too, bro. You know, and it stands out in like the container.
Yeah.
Just looking juicy in the fridge. You're like, rah.
I'm gonna eat this one time and then keep it rocking. But yeah. I get what you're saying though. Is that like everyone stays in their lane.
But look, just like it go back to the system with the policy, though. That's one of our things in the policy. Like, we always say, if you don't bring nothing of, like, if you got a Rolex or something, don't bring that in the house.
Bring a safe in the house. Keep yourself safe.
Yeah. So what we say is, like the policy, if you get caught stealing, you leave.
Right then and there.
There ain't no. Things about it, though.
And depending on what it is, we'll encourage the person to press charges against you. Like, that's a natural consequence. Do not steal.
Yeah, but in our, you know, people, like, a lot of times, if they're going to take something, it's going to be, like, small stuff, like food or something like that. But as far as, like, people taking money, IDs, social security numbers, you know, all that type of stuff, like, that's something that's not ever happened. That actually is, like, one of the things that we got to, like a mindset that we got to cross out for a lot of people too, though, because they think, like, oh, they finna come up here and steal and they're going to be fighting in the house, everything like that. A lot of people probably have more fights at their personal home than we didn't have at the sober home.
We ain't had
no fights, no broken walls, no punch, nothing, no fights, no nothing, though. So that's just a stigma that we got to break, though. I think that comes from like music, videos and movies and everything like that. Like, they the worst of the worst people, though.
Right, and some people choose not to go to recovery homes because of that, but that's a very small number of people who have trust issues. And I'm not going to say that we haven't heard or like we've had like somebody came and was taking some little stuff. Well, I think it's like little stuff. She lasted a day or two because it's like these residents are like, hey, what's going on? Something's not right, you know. They're all talking together, figuring it out. You know, they're like, let's get out of here because we hold each other accountable in our house. So if someone tries it, they're not going to stay there for long. And hopefully if you do steal, you steal our TV or you steal our stuff versus other resident stuff. Mm-hmm. But they just feel like they're going through so much stuff. The last thing, they're not in here trying to steal stuff because they're trying to not, if someone's doing that, they're still using. We do random UAs. We do different things. Like I said, the residents are like bloodhounds. You look like you want to use, they're on top of it. Like, they're texting me, calling me, like, can you do a UA on so and so? We're like, yes, no problem, you know? So we do listen to our residents, but like I said, yeah, the residents are protective of their house and they don't want no one to steal their stuff as well. So anytime somebody comes in, the residents are their own security. They're really their own security. It's their house.
True.
They're not going to let them come in their own house.
Yeah, what's UA?
It's to test for drugs. They you and you pee in a cup.
You're in the house.
Yeah.
So like you pee it, if it's tea, you got any drugs.
Yeah, that's instant. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Mm-hmm. But when we tell you that the residents are protected of their house, we're just like, we just pay the bills, basically.
Okay, got you.
Speaking of bills, what a segue. Now let's talk about rent.
Let's talk about that.
All right. So walk us through, for one, as someone that, you know, is familiar with landlords, man, like, it sounds like a heart attack to be like, hey, guess what? I'm gonna do with your home. I'm gonna turn it into a sober home. You know, walk us through that process of talking with a landlord to convince them that you're going to turn their home into a sober home.
But like one of the things too, like what we always say is coaching is key, right? Like when you're dealing with somebody who got credibility, that's gonna get you way further than somebody who don't got no credibility at all. Like one thing before we even reached, start getting like rental properties and everything, we built our structure where we know how our structure is built and ain't finna fall down, nothing like that though. So what we do is there's a few things. So we either go to Marketplace, Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, you know, all these different locations. We get a location. We see if it's ran by like a big management company. Even if it is, though, if it's not, though, we call a landlord direct. We just got certain scripts that we say to he or she, that even if they hang up on us, we send them something in the mail. But the thing is this, right? So even if it's managed by big property management, we don't talk to them at all. We find out who the owner is, and we put something in the mail to the owner, though. Because the thing with property managers, though, they don't want to deal with people like us who want to come in to be recovery home experts in their house and, you know, all that type of stuff, because we cutting out their portion of the money that they going to make, though. So it was an instance for us. It was a couple of years ago. We was helping somebody open up a recovery home. And it was, what was the name of that joint?
Hazleton?
Nah. The big, it's a big property. Yeah, housing hub. It's a management company up there. So it was a house, and this lady liked it a lot, though. So instead of us, you know, calling them, we sent a letter to the owner of the house, though. There's ways that you can do that. We sent the letter to the owner. She called us like, oh, we got your letter. Yeah, we don't really want to deal with them. It was whatever. I can't remember what the reason was, though. But she was happy, and that lady got the house and turned it to a recovery home, though. So, but the reason why it worked out for her was due to the fact that we had credibility behind them. We always say, like, coaching is key. No matter how much, like, say, I know everybody out here invests in themselves some way, somehow, though. You got to invest in yourself. So when you do make certain decisions, you're not looking like a fool. Your rebuttal game got to be good. You got to know what stuff to mail out to them. You got to know what stuff to talk to them about. You know what I'm saying? You can't just come on, oh, yeah, I'm Billy. And you know how they feel it. Like, you don't know what you're talking about, though. Like,
for you got to say it with your chest, bro.
Yeah. Like, it was one time we had a lot of confidence going into it. Like, this was our second, third sober house that we opened. We called this dude, da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, this is what we wanted to do. He hung up on us. Damn. We laughed at it, though. But then 5-10 minutes later, he called us back. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry for hanging up on you. I've been thinking about it. Yeah, it is something that we might want to do. Do you got any references, this, and that? So we sent him the references. The reason why he did it, because his wife died from alcoholism. So you just got to know the way to do stuff and, you know, be smart about it, though. And even if you ain't got people like us, you can just learn it. You can learn it, though, but it's just going to take time. You can't think of nothing about instant gratification when you finna rent out, because the stigma that all of us had about recovery housing prior to us even learning about it, though, is the stigma that they got about it, too. They want to continue to make that $500 a month, $700 a month, and go get 30 properties, though. You know what I'm saying? So they like, why you want to call me and disrupt everything that I got going in my system that I'm trying to build? So you got to convince them, like, your system is messed up. Deal with our system. You might even get paid a couple extra $100 a month more.
You got to find a decent landlord as well. So that's the first thing, finding a landlord that's not counting your money. Like, oh, you're going to do what? You're going to charge how much? Well, your rent's going to be $3,500. So if someone's trying to count your pockets, it's like, no, we're not going there at all. That's just, they're going to try to, after a year, they're going to be telling you they're not going to re-rent to you just to try to do it themselves. So you have to have a true landlord that just wants to rent the property and they're happy with their $500 and $600. Like, that's all, that's what you have to find.
Like, one thing too, like, so when we know somebody, what they rent is automatically, they tell me what the rent is and, you know, everything online. When they say, oh, you're doing the sober house, like, I ain't got no, if they regular rent was $2,000 a month, I don't have a problem paying $2,200, $2,250. But I'm not finna pay $2,500 or $2,700 just because you know what we finna do.
That's counting your pockets.
Yeah, counting your pockets, because in reality, we taking all the risk off you. We we're making sure the house stay up to par. If we really like the house, we're doing 3-4 year leases. We might even add some egress windows. We add property value to your house.
Man. We just explained to them that all the stuff that their times to renting, their turnover, maybe having to take someone to court, maybe having to call them because they're not paying their rent, getting city complaints because the yard is messy, anything like that, like that's going to disappear for you. You're not going to have another nuisance call. You're not going to have this. You're not going to have this. You're not going to have people in your house drinking, doing drugs. There's not going to be partying. There's not going to be animals here. So we kind of talk about, as a landlord, what are their cons? What do they not like about that job? To let them know that this is a business. It's going to be moving ready every time. Like, this is what it's going to look like. And even if you don't have a recovery home, you're able to go online and be like, this is what our business is going to be. We're going to have a recovery home. Look how beautiful this house is. Look what it's going to look like. This is how it's going to be for us. You don't have to screen our people. We're going to screen our people, and we're going to assure you that people's not going to be coming in here doing A, B, C, D, E, F, G, because once you rent, you're the master lease holder. So they're not checking your people, you know, you're having your people come in. They're not doing that kind of stuff. So it's just really being confident and positive that you know how to be the master lease holder, what expectations you're going to have for your residents, how you're going to run that house, how they're just going to really just enjoy you being there. And then after a year, if this works out for both of us, let's do a 3-5 year lease and make it happen, you know? So then they're like, okay, great. Because they're kind of at that time, hands off. Like, they know if something structural happens to the property, you're going to call them. But as a business and you having maybe 8 people in there and it's going to be moving ready all the time, because that's, as a recovery house, it's going to be moving ready every time a resident comes. They're like, this is so beautiful. Like, does anybody live here? Because it's always nice and put together. They're going to like that. They're going to like that you have curb appeal, because since it's a business, you want it to be welcoming. So they're going to love, like, this is great. Do you want to open up another one? I got another property down the street, you know? They're going to be coming to you for more and more if they're a true landlord and they're in the business of renting homes.
Right, and that's what I'm, like, I say it all the time. Like, being a work for us, too. It's like, we got websites where people can go to and see our houses. If we're dealing with people locally, they can come to our house anytime and look at the house and see how clean we keep them, though. You know what I'm saying? So when something, you're dealing with somebody like us, you got a whole package that we come in with, too, though.
We have references and everything.
Gosh, you guys come with authority, references. So it's tough to take you a lot more seriously, right?
Yeah, you're the real deal.
I got you.
When we start off like that, though, we had to learn. But go ahead, sorry.
Let's talk about your course. Tell us about your course that you're working on.
So what we did, what we came up with was a self-paced e-course. So we had a lot of failures that we had. It was a lot of learning experiences that we learned from. So what we wanted to do, we created an e-course to show everybody how to open up a proper recovery home in any city and state, in any country too. You just take our blueprint and you can go anywhere and do it. Like, we always say, the laws might be a little bit changed, but there's laws in place for you to win out there. So what we did is we created a self-paced e-course because before we started doing this e-course, we was coaching people one-on-one. It was just too much time that we were spending with people though. So what we had to do, it was a good thing that COVID came through, because we was able to sit down and focus and lock that in, though. You know what I'm saying? So what we did was create that self-paced e-course where you can learn, where we teach you everything on how to do reasonable accommodations, where to look for houses, how to talk to landlords, just everything, other resources.
The housing agreement, policies, procedures, how to furnish your house.
Yeah, third-party payments, dealing with treatment centers. I mean, what stuff to put in your policy, everything like that. Because
the budget. How to get it started. And one story we didn't say, we was like working paycheck to paycheck. And we had a little money in savings, but we're like, we need that for an emergency. We used credit to get our first house up and running. Like, we have like money like that. So when we talk about... in the e-course, we just said we talk about creative ways to get started to open up your first recovery house. But we did not just have the money to do it. So we get credit for our egress windows, credit for our mattresses. We did credit for everything. And then we was able to pay the bills off with the income from our recovery house. So that's how we was able to do it.
And you can also think about like the courses, right? Like for the niche that you guys are going after, you rarely hear people doing courses. I mean, from my own personal awareness, it's not like a hot market where you go make a course. Are there other people that you've come across in the space who you're competing with who are launching a similar course?
Not some similar. It might be like in the same like niche market though. Like it's some
like
people
a real estate type of thing.
Yeah. It might be like trailer parks or, you know what I'm saying? Something like that. It's a little bit niche, but not nothing niche like this though.
Yeah.
So that e-course is like real, it's self-paced. You can learn it your own. It's going to teach you how to open up, you know, a recovery home wherever you at though. We're going to show you how to get everything up and running if you're successful.
We have speakers
on there. Mm-hmm. And we got some good landlords on there. We got people on there from treatment centers. It's jam-packed.
Just talking about information. Like what recovery is, the big part of recovery housing. Because just because we do recovery housing, we don't want people to think like, of course we do it. We're going to say it's important. So we have people in that field, treatment directors, that talk about the importance of recovery homes. Because in reality, if people is going to treatment and they don't have a safe place to sleep at, they're not showing up to treatment. Like they're not going to do the treatment if they're sleeping on the bus, if they're homeless, if they are sleeping, have to sleep with people just to have a shelter over their head, more than likely they're going to have to use to do that act. So they don't make it to outpatient treatment. So doing that outpatient treatment goes hand in hand with outpatient treatment goes hand in hand with recovery housing. They have to have a safe place to sleep at, rest, to be able to focus on their recovery.
And do you see growing the course business as like going to be like the predominant focus of moving forward? Or do you see yourself still accumulating more houses to turn into recovery homes?
Yeah, for us, we're going to build an e-course out though. Like for us with the houses, like, It's a good opportunity, but we more on the aspect of just helping more people become financially free. Yo. Like that's our biggest thing because like what we said earlier, it's such an untapped market and it's so not many of us in it though. We gonna help everybody to get in it though. But in particular though, we push it for them black people to get up and then the minorities to get into it. You know, and so they got a guy where, you know, they can start making good money and just changing stuff for their family and bills and college, everything like that. But that's why I'm making
it. Yeah, so we're going to keep the two homes we have and just, we have clients that we work with coaching. So it seems like it's our house because we, you know, I'm constantly on the phone and we're coaching people. So, that's what we're going to continue to do. Keep doing our one-on-one coaching with individuals and having mini courses on top of the e-course that's out now. That's like a 5.5 hours guide. Then we're going to have smaller ones that goes into more details about certain situations.
Gotcha. And just to give people some context, on a yearly basis, how much money were you making on average?
One house.
Let's do one, then do two.
Yeah, so just say like you're gonna be making like six figures, like you could almost do like six figures just with like one house.
Amazing. Where can people find you?
If they're interested in our e-course or when you're interested in our e-course, you can go to cdhrecovery.com. Our Instagram is cdh.recovery and Facebook is cdhrecovery. And if you're interested in looking at our sober homes though, we got recovery homes, we got tours of like both of our houses on our website. That's centralvillagehousing.com.
Amazing. All right, ladies and gentlemen, with that being said, that wraps up the pod. I'm Alex.
And I'm Owen.
And the hustle is what you can control. So control your grind and control your life.
Peace out,
y'all. I switched it up a bit.
Yeah, I noticed. I was kind of like, oh, you caught an audible on the call.
Thank you so much for listening.
The conversation continues on our Instagram at 247hustler. We post very frequently. And be sure to check out our merch at hustleovereverything.co. We have some amazing sweaters, hats, mugs, and a lot more. Lastly, our Proud to Pay program is linked in the description below. Thank you so much for your support. Talk to you next Monday. Peace.